Bob Ellel, Friday 24th of August, Rabbi David Rowe, Doing Mitzvahs Lishmo.
Morning. The subject of Doing Mitzvahs Lishmo, I came to it inspired from a sefer I have at home, I'm sure everybody here has, a wonderful book, a sefer in English by Rabbi Pinchas Roberts of the Hendon Adas, Through the Prism of the Torah, and I saw an interesting Dvar Torah there from the Darkei Musa, and I thought it would be something we could develop. Rabbi Roberts himself, of course, recently underwent an operation from which he's, Baruch Hashem, recovering well, and I'm sure on behalf of everybody, we all wish him a refuah shleima to get all his koyach back again. The Gemara Sanhedrin on Daf Tes Zayin Omad Beis says, Torah Rabbonon, Minayin Shema'amidim Shoiftim LiYisrael. How do you know that you appoint judges to Yisrael? Talmud Loimer, as it says, and that's the beginning of this week's Sedra, Shoiftim Titein, you shall appoint judges. Ask the Gemara, Shoitrim LiYisrael Minayin, how do we know we have to appoint Shoitrim as like police and to enforce the law? The Gemara answers, Talmud Loimer Shoitrim Titein. It says, Shoiftim V'Shoitrim Titein. Ask the Gemara, Shoiftim L'chol Shevet V'Shevet Minayin. How do you know every Shevet needs Shoiftim? Talmud Loimer Shoiftim L'Shvotecho. There's a few words in between, Shoiftim V'Shoitrim Titein L'chol B'Shorecho L'Shvotecho. But the apostles L'Shvotecho is going on the Shoiftim. How do you know Shoitrim L'chol Shevet V'Shevet Minayin? How do you know Shoitrim? Talmud Loimer Shoitrim L'Shvotecho. So there's a series of four questions and answers. How do we know we need Shoiftim and Shoitrim and each time for a Shevet? Because it says so in the Torah, Shoiftim v'shoitim titin l'chol v'shurecho l'shvotecho. Ask the Darkei Musa, well surely this is a strange discussion in the Gemara. How do you know something that's written b'feirush in the Torah? Because it's written b'feirush in the Torah. How do you know about Shoiftim and Shoitim and l'shvotecho? The truth is I was thinking it's not such a strong question, because Lemaisa, that Gemara carries on and gives extensions of that, about how we appoint a Sanhedrin and Setrahedrin, Kitana and Sanhedrin, Gedoyla, and this could have been looked at as just an introduction to the later drosh as like an easy start. The Gemara often does a style of Lozu Afsu, it tells us something simple and then something harder, but the truth is this is almost so simple, it's overfairish in the Torah, and a Mishnah and a Braisa is really there to tell us something beyond the Mishnah and the Braisa. So he asks, why does the Gemara go through this analysis? He answers that it's to teach us that we shouldn't rely on our logic. Most people would have thought that we would have to have judges. How can you have a legal system? How can you have a fair system in a country without any judges? And therefore it's logical to have shoiftim, and indeed shoitrim to help enforce the law. No, says the Gemara, how do we know we have shoiftim and shoitrim? It's because the Torah says so. It's got to be written in the Torah, we have to do it for the mitzvah that Hashem says so, rather than rely on our logic. He adds that the non-Jews, they've got logic. They've got seven mitzvahs b'nei noach, and one of them is to have dinim. So they will have a legal, they're expected to have a legal system which is honorable and fair, as I think I can say it exists in this country, that the country is run fairly with the legal system. We don't always agree with every ruling that we hear of, but in principle there is a system of law which runs well in this country. And this is a fulfillment of one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. And indeed the Rambam says that concerning the rule of Dinim, that are a duty upon all non-Jews as one of their Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, with that we can understand, not in this week's Sedra, but many Sedras ago, when Shimon and Levi went to the defense of Dinah, when she was captured by Shechem and his father, and they killed all the inhabitants. And even though Yaakov Avinu sort of told them off, but he didn't tell them off too strongly. So why did he kill all of them? We understand that the Shechem himself and Chamor were chayav Misa, but how can you justify killing everybody? They didn't all kidnap her. So the Rambam answers, but they were breaking one of the Sheva, all of them were involved in breaking that mitzvah of the B'nai Nayach, of Dinim, of legal system. They were all happy to live in a system where somebody can kidnap an innocent girl and hold onto her himself. And they cooperated with that. They were happy with that system. Therefore, although they were not actively seen in that incident, but they were all breaking the law of Dinim, which is one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, and the Chayav Misa for that. Admittedly, the Ramban argues and gives another explanation and says it's not appropriate. But we do see that the non-Jews have a legal system, or should have one, as one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. What laws should they include in their legal system? Whatever appeals to them, whatever seems logical, and the law system develops in secular countries over many, many years. However, says the Darkei Musa, that's for them. We can only go by the Torah. However logical it would be to set up Shoiftim and Shoitrim, we should know that we're going to do it because it's logical anyway. But there's a mitzvah to do so, and we should never lose track of the mitzvah. Of course, this point, Rabbi Roberts extends it, that not only does this apply to Shoiftim and Shoitrim, but he says this would apply to Chesed and other mitzvahs. That when we have an opportunity to do chesed to other people, or indeed any mitzvah, and we feel inspired to do it, that we want to do it anyway, we shouldn't only do it because we feel the logical attraction to do that particular mitzvah, and or the requirement of the situation that we have to do it. No, we should not lose track of the fact to do it as a mitzvah because Hashem said so. We should do it as a mitzvah lishma as much as possible. And who do we learn better from than Moshe Rabbeinu? We find that Moshe Rabbeinu was almost like the mouthpiece of Hashem. Hashem sort of spoke through his mouth. Everything he did, we find a blessing in the Torah, Kasher Tzivah Hashem es Moshe. So he was always doing that. And how was he finally, or mainly, praised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being Avdi Moshe, the Evet Hashem? So, and this is the highest praise that a person can be, that he's reached the level of being an Evet Hashem. An Evet is not expected or even allowed to analyze and understand what his master instructs. If he's told to do something, he's not supposed to weigh it up and think, shall I or shan't I? He's supposed to do it with alacrity and with enthusiasm because the master says so. Moshe Rabbeinu understood more than all of us. And nevertheless, he was prepared to do and did everything Kasher Tzivo Hashem. Even a Talmud, of course, should not judge and weigh up what his Rebbe tells him. The Gemara recalls that once Rabbi Yochanan said something surprising, and it was something that most of the other Talmidim didn't really understand or believe, and one of the Talmidim said, yes, it's true, there is such a thing, what Rabbi Yochanan said. So most everybody thought, well, if Rabbi Yochanan says so and the Talmud confirms it, that must be good. But Rabbi Yochanan wasn't impressed, he wasn't pleased. When the Rebbe says something, he doesn't need his Talmud to agree, as if to say, on this occasion, I agree with you, but on other occasions, I'm not so sure. And Rabbi Yochanan looked at him in anger, and the Talmud withered and turned into a pile of bones, the Gemara says. I haven't quoted it in the text. And there are some, I think, who take that Gemara non-literally. I mean, imagine just Rabbi Yochanan looking at you without that intention. His wish that he could turn it, or feel like he turned into a pile of bones. And Rabbi Roberts concludes this point by saying this fits in with the well-known klal of Godol HaMetzuvah Va'Oisa Me'ena Metzuvah Va'Oisa, which has got many explanations. We would have thought logically that if we do a mitzvah voluntarily when we don't have to do it, or any act that we do of our own volition, that is really wonderful. We've made the effort, we've just decided to put ourselves out, and if we just do what we're told, we'd think, oh, so you're doing what you're told, it's very nice, but it's secondary. No, say Chazal, if we do Mitzvah V'Oiseh, certainly with respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if he tells us to do something, and we do it then we are doing it because we were commanded to do it, and that counts for more than if we voluntarily did it. There are many explanations of that. But I was thinking, just to add to what was said in that Dvar Torah and to extend it to one or two examples, what can we do if we do understand a mitzvah such as tzedakah? So then we're in a position that we really want to give tzedakah. We appreciate that sometimes it's needed. What kavanah should we have when we give tzedakah? So I've got a short chassidish story with a bit of a literature style, and a very short literature one about a chosid. So, in a book of Rav Zelig Pliskin, I came across just recently a short story about Rav Bunim of Psishcha, and a very poor man came in front of him, and he was really short of everything, and Rav Bunim was gave a generous contribution to him, and he left feeling quite pleased that he'd done well out of this visit. And as he was going, Rav Bunim called him back and gave him another small contribution, and he left even happier. The Talmidim asked the Rebbe, why are you giving twice? You gave a good generous contribution the first time, it's enough. So he said, The first time I was overwhelmed with compassion. I saw another Yid who needed money. He was short. He was desperately short. I couldn't help but feel, I gave whatever I could at that moment. And as he was leaving, I realized I hadn't really done a mitzvah. I had done a good deed, and I felt good about that, but I felt I was lacking in the mitzvah. So I gave another small contribution, which was the Shem Shemayim Lishmo, which I think is a bit of a brisker style, I was thinking of it, but it's a wonderful thought to elevate the first act and we'll do the second act. And there is in the Sefer the Chazon Ish, written of course by the Chazon Ish, who seems to have taken his name from the Sefer, he talks about a chosid. So he says a maisa about a chosid. But although he says a maisa, I think he really means it's a moshel. And although it says a chosid, I do think he means from the chasidim or rishonim. I don't know why he would otherwise say a chosid. But it could fit with either way around. There was a family that loved to have visitors. And every Friday night and maybe throughout the week they would often have visitors, and they had an arrangement with the gabbai in the shul that when there were people who needed to have hospitality, they would be sent to this home and they were expecting somebody to come. Let's say it was Friday night, so they were sitting in the family around the table, and they all loved visitors, the wife and the children, they all enjoyed having visitors and achnosos orchim. But he didn't turn up. And eventually they had their meal, and later they made their inquiries, and it turned out he had been allocated some other house. The gabbai got mixed up. So this family was left without a visitor. And everybody was upset, and they were genuinely disappointed that there was a quiet meal just for the home of the family. The father comforted them and said, when we invite somebody like that for a meal, it's not for our fulfillment that we should get the honor and the pleasure of accepting a visitor. Although of course we can have that pleasure, and it's the right thing to enjoy. But the real reason is for his sake, that he should have a good meal and that he should have somewhere to be and in a comfortable environment. And we do make him feel comfortable always, whoever comes. If he went somewhere else and he got a meal somewhere else, then that's been achieved. The mitzvah has been achieved. So it wasn't us who did it on this occasion. We shouldn't be focused too much on what we want to get out of the mitzvah, beinotam lachaveiroi, rather on the chaveiroi that he should get the mitzvah well. And this I've always heard about the Manchester Rosh Yeshiva, who had his own yeshiva, of course, in Manchester, and another yeshiva would start up, and people felt that maybe he would, they shouldn't even have thought this, that maybe he would have had reservations. On the contrary, he gave full encouragement to the other yeshiva, and he said, the ikkar is that people should learn wherever they feel comfortable. They don't have to come to my yeshiva. And he gave all forms of encouragement and brocha to another yeshiva that was in the same town. Because he wasn't there that his yeshiva should be successful. Of course, whoever came to him, he would do his best with them. But the ikkar is that Torah should be learned in a place where people are comfortable. The Gemara says about a non-kosher food that we shouldn't say it is something that I eat shibo. I don't want to eat it. Because that's not true. It's very attractive. It's meat with a nice flavor and a nice smell and a nice taste. And we shouldn't say I don't want to have it. We should rather say I do want to have it, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says I mustn't. And therefore every time we have such an opportunity to think of something not appropriate and we refrain from it, we should realize I would have wanted it, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says so. The Rambam says in the Shemayna Parokim, how does this apply? This applies to chukim, certain mitzvahs that we don't understand. Why should we not be able to eat the meat? But Hashem says so. What about mishpotim meinodim lachaveiroi? Should we have a similar approach as well? Should we also say, really I'd like to steal, but Hashem says I shouldn't? Or really, if somebody's in my way, I'd like to hit them out of the way, but Hashem says I mustn't do that sort of thing. No, says the Rambam. When it comes to mishpotim and mitzvahs that we understand, then those mitzvahs should lead us to an understanding and appreciation of what is good behavior bein adam lachaveira. We should say, I want to be kind towards other people, and I want to avoid harming them in any way. And for those sort of mishpotim that we do understand, we should be in tune with such mitzvahs, so there should be an understanding. But I do think that the Rambam would agree that shouldn't therefore be the only motivation of doing the mitzvahs. Yes, we should understand, and we should be very happy to do the mitzvahs of chesed and other beinotam lachaveiroi, But not that that should be our only motivation. When it comes to the chukim that we don't really understand, that could be the only motivation. We shouldn't think, I wouldn't want the meat anyway. We would want the meat, but we're not allowed to have it. And we say in davening every day, Magid devor liyato chukov mishpotov yisor lo osachein lechol goy. We've got chukim and mishpotim, but lo osachein lechol goy. They haven't got that. What have they got? Because what do they, the pasuk would have expected sort of to end, but chukov bal yidol, that they don't understand the chukim. But they, everybody can understand mishpotim. It says, mishpotim bal yidol. They don't even understand the mishpotim. So this can have many meanings. One is that every mishpot has got its complications, and another thought could be to fit in with what we're saying, even the mishpatim are not simple. We don't do them just because of logic, although we should understand them and enjoy doing them, and we should do them lishma because Hashem says so. So I'll give you two more examples of this point. In Bava Metzia, Daf Samach Aleph on a base, the Gemara gives three examples where it mentions Yetzias Mitzrayim in the Torah in connection with a particular mitzvah, such as ribis and tzitzis and mishkolis. And the Gemara says, why does it mention Yetzias Mitzrayim with ribis? To answer the Gemara, because Hashem wants to give us a reminder we shouldn't try and do any tricks with ribis and try to lend money as if it's from a non-Jewish source where the ribis would be permitted. No, says Hashem, I took you out of Mitzrayim and I knew exactly in Mitzrayim at Makas Bechayrus who was a Bechayr and who wasn't a Bechayr, which ordinary people wouldn't know because there was so much adultery going on there. But I knew who was really a Bechayr and I know if anybody is trying to cheat with ribis. So it's a way to remind us. Tzitzis, there's a possibility of being dishonest with the color of Techeles and presenting something else which was known not to be Techeles and pretending that it was. No, says Hashem, I know exactly what's going on and this will inspire us to keep the truth. And the same with Mishkolos, the old fashioned system that they have of weighing things with little metal weights on one side, and we could cheat on the weight of it. No, says Hashem, I will know if you're cheating. And those are the three examples given. After that it says, Omale Rav Chanina Misura to Prosa Ravina, Yitzias Mitzrayim to Chosra Rachmona Gabe Shrotzim Lomali. Why does it mention Yitzias Mitzrayim again and also with respect to Shrotzim? That's at the end of the Sedra Kedoshim, after it goes through all, after all the forbidden animals and birds and insects are mentioned and the permitted ones and that. At the end it says, I took you out of Mitzrayim. Why is it mentioned there? So Ravina gave a similar answer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I know about Bechor in Mitzrayim and who was a Bechor and who wasn't. It's possible to cheat by selling minced fish or kirve dogim, it says, the innards which have been, you can't tell anymore whether it's kosher or not. A person could sell kirve dogim and pretend that they are kosher. I will know, says Hashem, which is a similar answer to the other three with ribis and the others, although it doesn't fit with shirotzim exactly. It's rather with dogim, but I suppose the insides of a fish is like shirotzim. Though the truth is, the posset doesn't mention it only on shirotzim. It's sort of covering the whole parsha of forbidden food. But then the Gemara says, the questioner says, Omalei, I knew that answer, and that fits with the other three, but this time, Anohamale Kokashali. It doesn't say, I took you out of Mitzrayim. This is the only place where it says, Hama'ale Eschem. And Ma'ale implies, I took you out with a greater elevation. There was something special about the mitzvah of Shrotzim which is more worthy of mention. Therefore, it's apart from this. Ah, Ravina said, was that your question? I can answer that one as well. Look at the Tanya Devei Rabbi Shmuel, because Rabbi Shmuel says, Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Il Mole Ha'elisiyas Yisrael Mitzrayim Ela Bishvil Dovozeh. If I only took them out of Mitzrayim for one reason, She'ein Metamin L'Shrotzim, that they avoid Shrotzim, because that was the parsha, Dayai, that would be enough. So Hashem was male out of us, out of Mitzrayim, with a view that we should keep the mitzvah of Shrotzim. Omale Umi Nofish Igrayu, and is it such a wonderful thing? Is the reward for keeping Shrotzim and avoiding non-kosher food like that so great, more than ribis and tzitzis and mishkolis, which don't get the word male? Omale, he said, Apagav Delo Nofish Igrayu Tzvei, although the individual reward is not so great, Ma'isi, they are despicable, the machlinu, that to eat them. So because they are very despicable, so this is now focusing on shrotzim in particular, to eat insects that many people wouldn't eat them anyway. I know some people in England make delicacies out of snails, and in France they eat other things. But the Gemara says these are ma'usim. They are, in their own nature, they are considered as despicable to an ordinary observer who would eat a slug, and so on. So therefore the Gemara says this is special, this is a milah. And I think the simple pshat is, why is that a milah? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to become sort of ma'us by eating something which is ma'us. We find that all aveiros are bad, but eating aveiros are even more bad. The food that we eat becomes part of us. And for that reason, Tosfos says in many places that Hashem... Hashem protects a tzaddik from doing an aveira inadvertently. The Gemara says it, but Tosfos says it only applies to eating aveiras, because the food that we eat becomes part of us. It's possible that a tzaddik inadvertently might do something else wrong, but what we eat becomes part of us. We eat something more, so we become more. That's such an awful thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to have that. But the Ksav Sofer answers a different, because I've asked the question, what does the Gemara really mean by saying it is a mo'us, and therefore it's such a valuable mitzvah? And he says a different point, that just as we don't eat non-kosher meat, which is attractive because Hashem said so, why should we refrain from shrotzim? Not because they are mi'us. They are mi'us, but we should refrain because Hashem said so. We should refrain lishma. And it's harder to refrain from something lishma, which you're going to refrain from anyway. You wouldn't dream of eating these insects because they are mo'us. We overcome that, and we say to ourselves, why wouldn't I eat it? Because it's an aveira. Achas v'sholom, to eat an insect which is not permitted. And it's harder to achieve that madrega of refraining lishma on something like insects. With meat, it's easy. The only reason I won't eat the nice meat that's available is because Hashem says so. But to say it on Shrotzim is harder, and therefore the reward is greater. We find in the Torah Yitzchak and Rivka were childless for 20 years. And they davened fervently to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have children. Eventually they were blessed. And we find that Yitzchak Avinu was answered, as Rashi says, She'ein adoyme tefillas tzaddik ben tzaddik letefillas tzaddik ben rosho. Somebody like Yitzchak, who was a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, and therefore his tefillah was answered. Rivka was very good, a tzaddik, but she was from a rosha, and therefore it's not as good. So the famous question is always asked, that surely she was therefore a balas teshuva, and the Chazal tell us that even when tzaddikim gemurim, balei tshuva stand, tzaddikim gemurim can't, a bal tshuva is the highest madriga we can imagine. So why should Yitzchak be answered and not Rivka? So, I've got two or three answers. First of all, she wasn't really a balas teshuva. A bal teshuva is somebody who's done the wrong thing, and who was on the right path, went off the path, and then did teshuva and came back. She was never on the wrong path, and therefore she was she hasn't got the miler of being a bal teshuva. She was brought up in a family that they did the wrong thing, but she was only 3 years old. She hadn't herself done anything wrong. She was able to perceive that they were on the wrong path, and she went away from it. She was just a tzaddik. A second answer could be that in terms of tefillah, there's a mila of the purity of a tzaddik ben tzaddik. Such a person has got a purity, and for tefillah it's a mila, not necessarily in all other respects. But following our approach, we could maybe answer that I once saw in a book written by Rabbi Uri Zohar, who himself used to be a performer in the Israeli modern music scene, and he became a bal teshuva. Again, really a tzaddik rather than a bal teshuva. And he writes a book about himself, how he came that way. And at one point he writes, and I think very self-deprecatingly, because it's very difficult for someone to have made the move that he did move, he said, for me it was really easy to change my ways. I had, and for really frum people, the frum from birth people, that's quite difficult for them to stay frum, he said, because they think that the secular world and the music world there entertain has got something to offer. There's something glamorous there, and not allowed to get involved with it, and we don't get involved, but we think we're giving up on something, and it's hard for us sometimes to carry on doing the right thing. He says, for me it's easy. I've been there. I've met all these people. I know what they're like. They're empty. They're selfish. There's nothing of value in there. For me, once it was a difficult first step to realize that it's empty. But having made that step, I look back on it. I have no temptation to that anymore. It's easy for me to be from now, but I think he deserves a lot of credit, of course, for all this. And since then, he's a tremendous koyach in Kirov for other people. But the point is surely a true point that people who are brought up from, they have a different outlook on these things. So I think Rivka and Yitzchok could fit into these two viewpoints. Rivka had seen Avodah Zorah at home. She made the decision one day, but after some thought, this is not for her, it's empty, it's stupid, I've seen what they get up to, they're not to be admired in any way, I don't want to be like them. And as soon as the opportunity arose and a messenger came to marry Yitzchok, she jumped at the opportunity. They said, do you want to go? She said, Eileich, whether you let me or not, I'm going to go. She had made that step. Having made that step, it was sort of easy to carry on. Yitzchok Avinu had been brought up with perfection. Who could be brought up in a better household than with Avram and Sarah as parents? He could have just drifted with the tides. He could have basked in the glory of having such a distinguished father and just carried on saying, I'm a Ben Tzaddik, I'm alright, I can do what I like. And in fact, some say that Lot, who wasn't a son, but he was a nephew, he did that sort of thing. Although Lot put himself out with Mesiris Nefesh in Sodom and risked his life literally, nevertheless, that wasn't the reason why he was saved. The Pasuk says Hashem remembered Avraham, and therefore he saved Lot. Because Lot was only, the Rav Simcha Zisal says that Lot was only following the style he'd learnt from Avraham to be a Baal Chesed. And therefore he wasn't doing it with the Lishma, he had picked up that habit and he was following it very well, but it wasn't his mile, it wasn't his middah. Yitzchok could have been the same. He could have just been a Ben Tzaddik, but he wasn't. Yitzchok thought about everything he learned from Avraham and Sarah, but he developed his own middah. He becomes one of our Ovos in his own right, not just because he was the son of Avraham, but each of the Ovos was a Tzaddik in their own right. So he wasn't just a Ben Tzaddik, he was a Tzaddik Ben Tzaddik. And it's harder for a Ben Tzaddik to achieve perfection than it is for a Ben Rosha. A Ben Rosha just has to make the one step. It's still difficult, but you look back and why would I go back there? But a Tzaddik has got nothing to regret. He's brought up in the most wonderful home, and nevertheless he didn't just stay frum because of that. He rather made the effort on his own right. So I think that fits in with our theme. So our parents and grandparents have worked hard to create Yiddishkeit and Moistus in England and throughout the world since the war in particular, and our generation and in particular the younger people than ourselves can easily just reap the benefits. The schools are available, the shuls are available, and it's not easy now to inspire the younger generation who are doing the right thing anyway. But to inspire them not to be mitzvahs anoshim melumotah, but to try to add things as a challenge for ourselves and for our children. Indeed, this generation has many new initiatives. The many new shuls, new kehillas are growing, and wonderful ways of learning Torah, such as Start the Day the Torah Way, which has recently been introduced and is spreading and is successful, and many more innovations that we should make. But we can't just drift along following the leadership and the guidance that the previous generation has done. We have to add our own mitzvahs lishmo. So to summarize, when it comes to mitzvahs, which are logical mitzvahs, we shouldn't just rely on our logic, but because it says in the Torah, such as in what we started, shoftim v'shoytrim titen, we should not do the judges just because we know we need judges to run the country, but because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us, as was said at the beginning by the Darkei Musa. And as Rabbi Roberts added, the best example of this is Moshe Rabbeinu, who truly understood the ways of Hashem well and could have explained them and did explain them better than anyone else, nevertheless followed just religiously and exactly what he was told as an effort of Hashem that we should all aspire to. Even though the Rambam says we should understand Mishpatim, those that we should do the Mishpatim with pleasure, with appreciation, but that shouldn't be our sole motivation. We should also realize and remember that every mishpot that we are keeping is a mitzvah, and we should try and do with that in our focus as well. As the Ktav Sofer said, we refrain from shrotzim that are the most meals, the most despicable thing that we could imagine of eating, but that shouldn't be the main reason. Yes, they are despicable, we should refrain because of the mitzvah. And Yitzchak Avinu, in some respects, was considered higher than Rivka in that moment, because she only had to be better than a bad upbringing. He had to be better even than a brilliant upbringing. And we must all try to be even better than our own upbringing and our surroundings and courage. And although I'm saying this to everybody, of course, I'm saying this to myself, and I hope we can all learn from this.